Hi, so I'm about to introduce you to Owen Fitzpatrick in his interview. The first 10 minutes or so of the interview, I forgot to record it, I forgot to hit record. So I'm just going to kind of go through my notes and just kind of cover a little bit, because it's really important kind of what Owen said. Things like about feeling blah and motivation, and some really kind of good insights into it. And then I'll kind of, you know, kind of put Owen straight after this essentially for you. So the first thing, I kind of, one of the things he said is like feeling blah is perfectly normal, and not to kind of another thing I kind of think he said later on as well was like, don't feel bad about feeling bad type of thing. It's just like, so but what he did say is that, you know, feeling blah is perfectly normal, but still do it. You know, in terms of kind of, you know, developing this conditioning of, you know, kind of doing your exercise no matter what, because of how important it is. And that you'll be, you know, eventually stronger for it, and that we're all going to come out of lockdown, you know what I mean, much stronger. But when he spoke about motivation, he's like, motivation, it gets you started, but discipline is what keeps you going. So while motivation is important, it's not the only thing, and especially seen as what he says, you can't always guarantee you're going to be in the mood for doing something. Yet when we're doing something that is a priority for us, when we do have a reason, you know, in terms of to look after our health and fitness, for those situations, you need a better plan, rather than just waiting till you feel better. So that's where the discipline side of things comes in, and we'll kind of go through that in a moment. But he did kind of say, is like, okay, how do we increase our motivation? How do we give us that kick, you know, to kind of, you know, kind of that drive, let's say, to kind of either start back up again or to keep us going and that kind of thing. So essentially kind of we're either motivated towards or away from things. And I've spoken about this many times before, and I know Owen's spoken about it numerous times in terms of that. That's what it is either away from something or towards something. Now, the whole positive thinking side of things is that we're motivated, you know, towards something. Oh, life is going to be great. I get all these endorphins from after my exercises, and I'll feel nice and toned, and I'll be able to wear nice clothes and blah, blah, blah. Now, that's great and stuff like that, but sometimes that's not enough of a pull. To kind of get you kind of out of a funk, let's say, is sometimes we need to focus on the negative side of things. What's going to push you forward? What is going to push you away? You know, in terms of what are the negative consequences of not doing it? And, you know, so that's what he kind of said, you know, kind of, it's not about necessarily positive thinking all the time. It's sometimes to think about the negative is, turns out to be a positive action that you can do. You know, often we kind of let ourselves, he said, you know, let's say kind of, ah, sure, it'll be grand. You know, we let ourselves off the hook, you know, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it next week, that kind of thing. You know, and kind of we're kind of lying to ourselves. But what he says is that's conditioning us or reinforcing bad habits that, you know, it's kind of like, it's not just around now, that they're bad habits that we're going to consistently have unless we start to change that mindset of around kind of, you know, doing things when we're not necessarily feeling up for it, motivated, you know, telling ourselves it might not be, you know, it's not the gym, it's not the best way to kind of do things. You know, he's kind of focusing on kind of, okay, how do you actually kind of focus on the negative side of things to push us? So to do that is you kind of like even write them down. So, you know, if I don't do this now, then what's the worst thing that could happen? If I skip my training session today or this week or whatever it is, what's the worst thing that can happen? And then what happens after that and after that and so on? So, you know, he said kind of like really kind of go deep in it, because a lot of people, he does say they kind of are a bit kind of like, ah, sure, you know, I'm not going to do it, or they'd be a little bit kind of hesitant to do it because they're kind of like, ah, sure, you know, it'll be grand type of thing. But let's say for me, kind of, it's something that I've done with Owen in the past to keep me motivated. And I spoke kind of previously about having struggled with energy levels and kind of health issues for quite a number of years, but what I've kind of done, and it's kind of helped me, is that I focus on what's the negative outcomes of these kind of things. So if I skip, you know, think I feel like I'm too tired and I skip a training session, oftentimes what's happened in the past is like I didn't get to do it the next day. Because either I just kind of went into a spiral and kind of that kind of, or something happened where it just kind of like I didn't get to do it, or I'll do my training later and then again I get distracted and I blow it off and stuff like that. So then I feel shit. And then when you feel bad, you make bad decisions. And it kind of like, you know, during lockdown, when you're feeling bad, you're looking for things. And, you know, for me, it's kind of like reaching for the wrong foods or even alcohol midweek and stuff like that. Then I wake up and I got a bit of a hangover or something like that, and I'd miss more training sessions. Then I'd start to feel tired and I'd stiffen up. I'd start to feel that kind of sluggish energy coming back. Then I'll kind of start worrying about starting back, that it's going to be harder. And soon enough, I'm because I'm not exercising, I'm feeling overstressed, I'm feeling exhausted, I'm feeling weak, I'm feeling sore, and it's spiraling, and I become afraid to start exercising again because it's going to be so hard. You know, my head is going to be so hard to kind of get back into it, and I'm feeling like a fraud because I'm not kind of, let's say, walking the walk. Home life becomes harder and harder. I'm snapping at Logan and giving it care and stuff like that. She's obviously kind of hating me for that part of me, I do this in terms of, you know, mentally kind of playing this out, this worst case scenario, until I end up losing the gym, I become an alcoholic, Kira leaves me, Logan grows up hating me. Now, you might say that's a complete over exaggeration, but we do this an awful lot with ourselves in terms of, ah, sure, it'll be grand in the future, I'll be able to do blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we're kind of, you know, again, kind of sugarcoating things rather than doing the opposite. Okay, what's the actual worst that could happen? So this is where kind of Owen starts to take it back up in terms of developing what he calls anti-fragility. Doing these kind of, you know, hard things to actually become less vulnerable. So this is where Owen's talking, using an analogy of going out to a restaurant as that. So I'll let Owen take it away from here.
They're off, you are. So let's say myself and John, let's say I go, I say, John, do you want to go for food? And John goes, yeah. And I, obsessed with Italian, I hate all other types of food, but I love Italian food. Whereas John, he can eat Italian, he can eat Chinese, he can eat Thai, he can eat Vietnamese, he can eat Irish, he can eat anything. If me and John go out for dinner, he has way more choices that will make him happy. Whereas I've only got one choice that will make me happy. We find an Italian restaurant. Everything else is problematic for me. So bringing that analogy across, if you can only work out under certain conditions, whenever you're, you know, in the gym, that's never going to be good for you. Because it means you're more vulnerable and you're more likely to be negatively impacted by anything going wrong. So the gym closes down. The gym, you know, has a water leak and closes for a few days. All of a sudden, well, I can't do anything, right? That's what we let ourselves away with. And so what my point is, you don't have to enjoy working out from home initially because it's not fun, but I had to do it. And I hate working out generally. I hated working out on my own even more. But I forced myself to do it because I knew that if I got out of the habit, it's so much harder. You know, those first four or five sessions, those first four or five runs that I would do, right? After not exercising or working out for months, I always remember them. They're agonizing. So I'm like, I want to keep going. And so what's really important is you don't have to enjoy the first few, but if you can get the first few under your belt and you can put it into your schedule, even if it's only half an hour, even if it's only 20 minutes three times a week, it's not ideal. But if you can get something done regularly and then work up to the proper workouts, then you'll find it easier to do it that way, right? If you turn around and you go, right, I need to work out every single day or four times a week in an hour and a half each, and that's what you're normally used to doing, you don't have to start there. You just have to start anywhere where you're making traction, because traction is the key here. And anything that stops you making traction is a distraction. That's where the term comes from. So what you want is you want to be able to make progress towards your goals. And that means, you know, doing any sort of exercise. Let me give you a simple example. Years ago, I was in a gym and I knew I needed to work out, but at the time I'd not established a strong discipline. But here's what I started to do. I never had enough time to go to the gym. That was my problem. So I would only have, let's say, 25 minutes. Now the gym was very close to me, but 25 minutes, you can't get a workout. There's no point in going. But what I started to do was I started to go to the gym, even though I would only literally be able to check in and check out. I would go to the gym, I would check in, I would go upstairs, I might do a few press ups, and then I would go back down and check out. And people would say, that's ridiculous. Why do you do that? And the answer is, because I did that every day, or like four times a week, it meant that when I did make time for it, I started, it was so much easier because I was already going to the gym. I was already leaving the gym. I was already in the gym. And the more time I spent at the gym, the more time I wanted to do more workouts because you're surrounded by other people that are doing it. Now online, you're not surrounded by other people that are doing it, but the more that you do it, the more that you put time in your schedule, the more you start to practice it on purpose, the more likely you are to get into a habit, get into a routine where it becomes natural for you. And so that's, I definitely recommend you get stuck in, get started with it straight away. Does that make sense, yeah. John?
Perfect. Awesome. And then kind of then let's say kind of looking on the nutrition side of things then, obviously, the, you know, kind of with extra stress and, you know, kind of, you know, that blur feeling, many people turn to food for comfort, emotional eating, that type of thing. So what can we do in that?
So there's a few things here. Probably the best idea to deal with this is what we call nudges. And a nudge is whenever you organize your environment to make it easier for you to eat the healthy food and harder for you to eat the unhealthy food. For example, Google did this. I visited Google a couple of years ago, and one of the top directors showed us around. And one of the things he was talking about is Google wanted to get their employees eating healthy. So they tried three things. The first thing they tried was they gave lots of nutritional information on all the snacks, right? Because they had like kitchens around the Google campus where they had like snacks like cookies and biscuits and, you know, chip crisps and all sorts of stuff. And then they also had fruit and, you know, all healthy kind of things. And so what they did was they tried, first of all, nutritional information. Didn't work. Second thing that they tried was they tried taking away the unhealthy food. There was a revolt. Remember reactants? People freaked out. They lost it. Don't take away our, you know, how dare you take away this, right? Third approach. They took all the cookies and the chocolate and the biscuits and the crisps and the cake and stuff. They put them all into containers and put them into the top shelf. And they put the fruit and all the healthy snacks right there on the tables. So when you walk in, it's so much easier for you to take fruit than it is for you to reach up, open the cupboard, reach in, take out the, like a few extra steps. And simply by doing that, they made a significant impact upon the levels of healthy eating. The healthy eating, like a lot more of the food, the healthy food was taken. People were eating a lot healthier as a result of that intervention. Why? Because when you make one behavior easier to do, people are more likely to do it, right? You can actually use laziness as a motivator. Laziness becomes the motivator that gets you to take action. You take your greatest weakness, laziness, into your greatest strength. You transform it. The way you do it is you make it easier to eat healthy and harder to eat unhealthy. Second of all, you can nudge yourself with reminders. Put something on the fridge. What now? Right? If you want to have fun with yourself, right? What are you looking at? Any of those kind of like phrases, you know? Or my favorite one, which I did was, especially when the pandemic first hit and I was like, you know, with the fridge all the time, it was like, really? ? And every time I looked over the fridge, I was like, it was just looking at me, that word, really? And I'm like going, no, not really. No, I'm just bored. Okay. And so then the other factor on that as well is besides nudges is plan for it. You know, when do you eat? Do you eat when you're stressed? What else can you do when you're stressed? Exercise is one thing. Meditation is one thing. Yoga is one thing, right? Getting a nap. Naps are great. Having a nap is one thing. There's all sorts of ways to deal with stress that isn't gorging. If you're bored, once again, what's a different way to do it? Lots of different strategies there. So there's all sorts of things. So what you do is you go, when I feel this, what am I going to do it? You set up what we call an if, when, then strategy. That's if I feel this way, then instead of doing that, I'm going to do this. Or when I feel that way, then I'm going to do this. So you create a connection between whatever has tempted you or whatever has put you in a bad mood or whatever has made you struggle. And you say, if this happens, then I'm going to do this. When this happens, then I'm going to do that. So you set yourself up for success that way. And then the other thing to be aware of is to recognize that sometimes we have associations, right? So you might have an association to sitting on the couch watching a certain TV show. You might have an association to something happening. And if that, if you're experiencing that, if that's something that you're used to, then the key is you need to grit your way through the first time you do it without food. So for instance, if every time you sit down and you watch the Late Late Show, you happen to be snacking at a popcorn, then what you want to do is you want to sit in front of the Late Late Show with a bottle of water in your hand, or, you know, with some grapes in your hand or whatever else it is. So what you need to do is you break the association. You make it so that the same trigger, which is sitting down to that TV show, no longer produces the same automatic, because most of the time it's automatic. We don't even notice it. You know, have you ever been in a situation where you find yourself like looking down at your hands and you're holding like a big packet of potato crisps and you're like, where did that come from? Right? I don't even remember it. It's like I've been in some trance, right? And the reason is because, again, we're just in our own minds. It's automatic. Our brains are like, don't worry, Owen, I got this. Don't worry. You, when you're pretty little head, you focus on all this other stuff. I got this. And before you know it, you're like six bites in going, oh, these are really good. What? And it's because, again, we've got this automated part of our brain. So what we need to do is we need to find ways to challenge this. Is this helping at all?
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Those of you who have questions, well, remember, pop them in the chat box. Again, you can ask Owen anything, anything on anything, pretty much. You see all the books he has behind it. I'm sure he'll know how to answer it. Actually, Judith sent in a question. So she was like, and she's been really honest with this, which is really great, and kind of props to Judith for asking. I think she's stuck in work, so she'll get the recording. But when you're feeling like mentally drained, defeated was the word she used, like, how do you get out of that mindset? Like, what takes when you are like just feeling so low and down?
Sure. First of all, accept it. Accept where you are. Accept that you're feeling drained. Stop, you know, feeling bad about the fact that you shouldn't be feeling drained. So accept that you're feeling drained and be okay with that. That's the first step, right? When you accept something, you take the power away from it. So often what we try to do is we try to beat ourselves up because we go, oh, I need to not feel this way. I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should be more motivated. No, accept it. Accept the way you feel at that moment, right? And then recognize, you know, that the only way that you're going to feel differently is if you, number one, take different actions. But number two, if you give yourself some time and space, because your body, whenever you feel defeated, it's not just a mental thing, it's a physical thing. And so what happens is we typically will find that our bodies are exhausted because we haven't been looking after them as well as we need to. So what we need to do is we need to find a way to what we call regulate our body budget. This basically means, what can I do to make myself feel better physically? And this might mean anything from, you know, there's all sorts of things that can improve it. There's getting out into nature helps. Going for a walk, a brisk walk helps. You know, breathing techniques can help. Stretching can help. Yoga can help, right? Meditation can help. Massage can help. Petting, you know, hanging out with your dog can actually help. Playing with your kids can help. Anything that makes you feel good and relaxed and happy can be very beneficial to give you a replenishment of that kind of energy. What tires us out and what exhausts us is the uncertainty, is the anxiety, is the stress that we're all subject to given the circumstances right now. So it's easy to feel mentally defeated. And the other thing to remember is if it's a case of not exercising when you're mentally defeated, well, think of it like this from a scientific point of view. The reason we're exhausted, like for example, let's say I'm exhausted today. So I've been working, I suppose, for a lot, like obviously for long hours. Now I'm going to, after I finish this call, before the next thing, I've got to go out for a run and got to go to the gym. Do I want to go for a run? No, I don't. Do I want to go to the gym? Absolutely not. There's not one part of me, even a small little teeny weeny, 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 weeny part of me that wants to. But here's the beauty. The reason why I'd be tired or exhausted, you know, besides working long, is because it's all mental. And so the blood flow in my brain since the time I started working is all there. I shouldn't be physically tired because all I did was walk around and mobilize and stretch on a regular basis, but it's not enough to get me tired. So all the tiredness is coming from the blood flow in my brain. But here's the good news. The good news is that when you exercise, you direct the blood flow away from the brain to the body. And so when you exercise, it's actually the equivalent of giving your brain a rest. And so if you're feeling mentally exhausted, actually the best thing you can do for mental exhaustion is not lie down, because then your brain keeps going. It's actually go out and exercise and direct the blood flow away from your brain. So it's the best thing you can do for your mental exhaustion is to actually exercise, because it gives your brain the break, the rest that it needs. So hopefully that helped answer that question.
That's awesome. I like that. And then let's say kind of, obviously, you know, a lot of people working from home, and even if they're not working from home, it's stressful times, you know, it's a how work-life balance, how can we separate the two? How can we switch off, you know, kind of?
So there's a few things here. First of all, it's important that you recognize that what the stakes are. The stakes are extremely high. If you guilt yourself into doing stuff and you keep saying yes to everything, every single time you say yes to one thing, you're saying no to everything else. So yes is no and no is yes. Every time you say yes to somebody, you're saying no to everything else. Every time you say no to someone, you're saying yes to something else. So you're always saying yes and no. And so what's important is that you need to deliberately begin to start to choose, what are you going to say yes and no to, right? And so this allows you to then prioritize. And really, everything's a choice about priorities, right? What are you going to prioritize? What are you going to start to say yes to? What are you going to make a decision on that will allow you to get the kind of results that you want? Whatever that is, that's your priority. What you say yes to is your priority. So if you're occupying yourself with doing all these different things, and you know it's taking time away from things that are important, that's on you. And I don't mean that to be you know, mean or negative or anything. I'm just saying we need to be honest with ourselves about what we're doing. And again, distinguish the difference between reasons and excuses, right? And when you negatively impact your own work-life balance, the reason that is because we don't know when to stop. Why? Because we haven't set rules. We are used to being in a circumstance where the office closes at a certain amount of time. We have our routines. Well, when you're working from home, you need to build new routines. And routines are more important than ever when you're working from home. So a few things. Whatever time you start work every time at the same day. Finish work every time at the same day. Take lunch every time at the same day. Take breaks every 45 minutes to 50 minutes, more or less, right? Get yourself into a set of routines where you do something the same way every single day. Why? Because the more you can do that, the more your brain likes it. Here's what happens. Your brain doesn't like change. It doesn't like to have to work hard. It likes to be automatic. It likes to be automated. So the less rules you have, the more decisions you need to make. And you experience what we call decision fatigue. And this means that you're trying desperately to go, okay, so what'll I do today again? As long as you have to have the energy of knowing what you have to do, you're going to have a problem. Instead, what you want to do is you want to go, what are the rules I'm going to set myself for now? What time am I going to start? What time am I going to finish? What routine am I going to have? What am I going to do before I start work? Give yourself little things where maybe you make yourself a cup of tea or a cup of coffee before you start work, right? What do you do during your breaks? Do you go from your break to email? Because that's not a break. But if you get up, I always say you want to get five things. You want to mobilize, as John would say, you want to walk around somewhere in your apartment, your home, your house, right? That's number one when you take a break, 5-minute break. Number two, you want to get some fresh air. Open the window. Stick your head out the window safely. Step out the door if you can. Get some air every time you break. Number three, stretch. Stretch your body. Stretch your movements. We're sitting so static. It's important that you stretch on a regular basis. Number four, you want to take a few good deep breaths in, right? So you're oxygenating your blood. And number five, you want to drink some water. You want to keep hydrated. Again, I don't have to tell you that. I'm sure John, you know, bends the ear off you about the importance of that, because he knows how powerful and important it is to hydrate. So those are the ways to take a break. So you should have your own routine set where you start work same time, finish work same time. Because then once you have that structure, then your brain no longer has to work hard, and therefore it's much easier for you to navigate your way through the day. The reason we struggle with it is because it's so difficult for us to decide, oh, what am I going to do today? It's like, you know, Barack Obama, as well as Steve Jobs, they used to minimize the choice of things that they wear. So Barack would always get Michelle to choose his tie, right? And he would always wear blue or gray suits when he was president. And Steve Jobs would always wear the famous black turtleneck. Why? Because by minimizing the amount of energy you put into a small task like, what am I going to wear today? He was able to have more decision-making energy for the decisions that matter. And both of them actually, you know, used to do that. Barack Obama talked about it in an interview he did with Michael Lewis during his presidency. So again, set up rules for yourself. Be consistent with that. Build structure around you. Make a clear environment. And the other piece of advice is make your environment somewhere separate. In other words, if you work from a particular room in the house, try to make it so that the only time you work is when you're in that room. In other words, if you just got to send a quick email, don't send it from your bed. Don't send it from the couch. Don't send it from the kitchen. Don't send it for the toilet. Actively walk to the other room. Or if you just have one bed or whatever, walk to the area that you work in and send it from there. Train yourself to associate the place with the mode, with the state. So when I'm in this place, I'm working. When I'm out of this place, I'm not. Train your brain to make that distinction, and you're going to find yourself finding it easier to switch off. Why? Because your brain has associations. That's why when I work with insomniacs for years, one of the best pieces of advice that I would give would be the only thing you should be doing in bed is sleeping, right? Bar certain things. But generally speaking, you don't read, you don't watch TV, you don't do work, you don't send emails, you don't check Facebook. When you're in bed, sleep. When you're out of bed, yeah, fine. But when you're in bed, you associate it with sleep. And by doing so, you associate bed with sleep, which makes it much easier for you when you go to bed to be ready to sleep.
Cool. I love that, the working from that one spot, because I certainly haven't been doing that. It's like, I put my laptop today.
But John, think about it. Like, if I work from my couch, my brain is observing this. So my brain is going, right, you're working from your couch. So therefore, when I'm watching TV, it's got all these associations with sitting on the couch. So I'm much more likely to think of work when I'm on the couch, if I've worked from the couch. Do you get me? You create these associations. And what you want to do is you want to minimize that as much as possible.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. You mentioned grit while you were talking to there. And I know I've heard you talk about it on podcasts before. Can you kind of talk about the notion of grit? And I think, does that link in with anti-fragility a bit and stuff?
Sure. So the concept of grit, this is by a lady, a professor called Angela Duckworth. And it's a great book if you're interested. But she talks about like what leads people to success in any area, from working out and getting fit right the way through to success in business, education. And she says grit tends to be one of the best predictors of who's going to be successful. And grit is the ability to have passion and perseverance to keep going, right? Even when you're tired, to keep going, even when you're bored, to keep going, even when you face adversity, to keep going nonstop. That's grit. And again, she has the two components, passion and perseverance. Passion is having enough motivation to move forward, and perseverance is the discipline to keep acting regardless of how you feel. So it really comes back to those two concepts, motivation and discipline. We could call them passion and perseverance. But it's the recipe for success, because you can't always be motivated all the time to do what you need to do. But if you can be motivated to get started, or motivated most of the time, and then the rest of the time discipline carries you all over, you put yourself in a great position. And then anti-fragility is that as you're working really hard, and as you're gritty, and as you're, you know, just taking the action you need to take, and you're pushing through, even if you don't feel like it, that anti-fragility is when something bad happens, now because you're gritty, you're more able to deal with challenges, because challenges are part of the process. Being gritty means you're up for it. You're challenging yourself. You're ready for it. You're not looking for the easy route. You're going, okay, bring it on. And when you have that attitude, it's also easier for you to see that as ways that it can help you to be better. Because by being anti-fragile, it means that the negative things that happen to you, or the disappointments or the setbacks, actually serve to make you stronger. The same way when we lift weights, as we lift weights, we break down the muscle fibers, and the muscle fibers grow back bigger, because you subject your arms or your muscles to adversity and it makes them stronger. And we all have that capacity. We all have the capacity to become stronger as a result of the adversity we face or the challenges we face. So being gritty is about being motivated and disciplined to take the action you need to take, even when you're tired, even when you're bored, even when you don't feel like it. And then anti-fragility is when things go wrong, finding ways to allow that, the things that go wrong, to make us better as a result of them going wrong, you know, to make us more capable than ever as a result. Does that answer that?
Yeah, that's awesome. And actually, speaking of the book that you kind of mentioned then, at the start of all of this lockdown kind of stuff last year, you kept on talking about your attention budget, where are you putting your attention on, and like intentionally putting it on stuff not other than COVID. So apart from your own podcast, which is called the Changing Minds podcast, podcast would you recommend on, like, let's say, self-improvement, mindset, that type of thing?
I would say that my favorite one that I listen to all the time is two friends of mine, and I only became friends with them during COVID. We got on a call, they reached out and said, anyone want to chat or whatever, and they're two friends, Adam and Adam from Australia, and they've got a great podcast called What You Will Learn. And it's a breakdown of every book, like all of these books, like a couple of hundred books now at this stage. They're bringing their own book soon, which I'll be lucky enough to check out. It's brilliant. But it's like they do a summary of the book, and it's really well done. A very good personalities. I like the two lads. They're great. But they break down all of these amazing books, I think, including Grit. And I do something similar with The Work Of, and that's one of the types of things that I do. But, you know, I probably prefer their version of it just because there's two of them and they're having a banter with each other. And, you know, there's only so much I could talk to myself without everyone thinking I'm insane, which is probably not that far from the truth. But, you know, I was in lockdown on my own, and it's nice to listen to the two lads. It's like going out for a drink with two friends and they're talking about books. When I did an interview with them, which I had on my own podcast, and we're just like, we sound like three nerds. We're like, oh, did you read that book? Oh my God, did you? Like, that's literally the interview from start to finish. Oh my God, this is amazing. Oh, I can't believe you didn't like that. You know, it's one of those. But their podcast is really, really good. Besides that, you obviously have Tim Ferriss, comes out with some like brilliant ones. Joe Rogan has a few good ones as well, although a little bit more philosophical, but some of the people he brings on are, you know, it's really good, and some very inspiring stories as well.
Yeah, he's hit and miss because he has some people that are just out there.
But he has like Tyson Fury story is a wonderful one. You know, Tyson Fury was a great episode and stuff. So he is hit and miss for sure. Another one would be, oh, Jordan Harbing. It's not so much in this area or improvement, but Jordan Harbinger show is pretty good. That's more to do with like influence and communication and stuff. So that's more my area would be good. But lots of good ones. Lots of good ones.
Perfect. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you very much. If anybody has any questions, now is your last opportunity. As I know, as I said, you've been up since 4 a.m., so I really appreciate you doing this. Any kind of final summations or anything like that on
it? I suppose it's just like, it can be so easy to listen to someone who speaks like, you know, on this, like John or certainly myself or, you know, anyone that's talking, to be able to go, well, it's easy, either it's easy for you to say, or, you know, well, I'm just not like that, or to find all the different reasons in the world. Because honestly, what we've been through the last 12 months, I know some of you might have been going, actually, it's not so bad for me, Owen, but for the majority of people, it's exhausting, right? I've been over here in New York, you know, I've been lucky enough to get home a couple of times, but even when I went home, I was quarantining for 2 weeks. Right, in a hotel room until finally I was able to see my parents, because I ain't going near them until I knew that I was safe. So it's tough and it's hard, and it's hard to stay sane, right? Never mind staying safe, it's hard to stay sane. And the reason I bring that up is, despite all that, I always try to get people to focus on, well, what can you control? What can you do, right? And what we can do is we can choose to see this as like Corona University or Corona Fitness. And I mean that by, if we can start to see this as an opportunity for us to get stronger, to become better, to improve, then we're transforming it. We're transforming this horrible, horrible, horrible experience of COVID-19 into something that empowers us, something that makes us tougher, stronger, better, happier, more relaxed, more loving, more wonderful. Some of us have learned, and I count this is one of my biggest lessons, to be more patient in the last year. I'm so much more patient now than I was a year ago. I was ridiculous a year ago, but I'm a lot more patient now. A lot of us appreciate our loved ones more than we ever have before, right? So there's a lot of other things that we need to look for. And we know that our health matters. But if we don't get into the habit of doing the things we know we need to do, especially when we don't feel like them, we're going to struggle. It's easy to exercise when you're super motivated. The real trick is, can you exercise? Can you log on? Can you do the things you need to do despite the fact that you don't feel like it? Because if you can do that, that is what will allow you to start to build the right kind of mental chemistry, right kind of attitude, right kind of feelings, right kind of motivation for the future. So it's not about what you do when you're motivated. It's about what you do when you're not motivated that will determine how successful you are. And that would be the most important thing that I'd want to leave with. And I really hope you found this useful. Again, I know I've been talking a lot and blah, 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 and rattling, but I'm hoping there's a few insights here there that you found useful that, you know, can help you in some way to be able to make a difference to the way in which you feel and the way you work.
Well, I know I've got about 5 or 6 pages of notes. So I've listened to you speak for the last 16 odd years or something, 17 years since I first met you. One last question from Trish. Any other book recommendations similar to Grit between passion and perseverance, that type of thing?
That's a very good question. So, I mean, Mindset is pretty good. That's Carol Dweck. And it's not strictly speaking, you know, the same thing. Mindset is pretty good just because it's by... that's by Carol Dweck, right? And that's to do with a fixed versus a growth mindset. But very much grit and mindset go hand in hand, because mindset talks about the fact that if you have a growth mindset, you can see yourself as improving. It's just about perseverance. There's also The Talent Myth, right? And there's also Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, which definitely speak to the perseverance piece. And then there's Mastery by Robert Greene, Greene, and that speaks again to the perseverance piece. And then in terms of passion, you know, what you're really talking about there is more motivation. And, you know, any inspirational book that motivates you, you know, will be good for that. Like in The Secret, I'm not even going to recommend The Secret, that's just ridiculous. You know, if you like it, fine, but like, give me a break. Hang on, I'm just going to imagine being really rich. Oh, where's my money? I don't understand why I haven't rich. Well, it's probably because you actually have to do something. You can't just like sit on the bed and imagine stuff. So anyway, so inspiring. I mean, you could find videos that are very inspiring that will get you to feel lots of passion. There's you know, different processes where you can go finding my passion and focusing on it. But a large part of the passion piece is really about reminding yourself of the why and spending lots of time setting goals and imagining your future and imagining what you want to have happen and taking some time to do that. That would be more on that side of things. And then, as I said, The Perseverance, Mastery by Robert Greene, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, The Talent Myth, can't remember the name of the guy, and Mindset as well by Carol Dweck. So hopefully that helps.
Awesome. Listen, thank you. Thank you very much, Owen. I know everyone's going to really appreciate it. So thank you all. Everyone give Owen a virtual clap. High fives.
Thanks very much, guys. Cheers.
All right, listen, thank you very, very much. I'll let you go. Cheers, buddy.
Thanks, John. Cheers. Thanks, guys. Be well.